But seriously, thank you for being here and for inviting me to speak again about the transformative power of feng shui. I'm going to begin the evening with just a tiny bit of history before I talk about some other things. So feng shui is an ancient Chinese art that involves arranging the energy of your surroundings in order to create a more peaceful and balanced and supportive environment. In Chinese, the word feng means wind and shui means water. And in my mind, when I think of feng shui or wind and water, I think of, you know, gently blowing winds, breezes over smoothly flowing water that just, you know, works very harmoniously together and creates a little heaven on earth. And pretty much that's what feng shui does for me. It creates a little heaven on earth for me. And really, you know, it makes things right in my world. And to give you an idea of just how ancient, we talk about it being an ancient Chinese art. Sources vary, but some say that the earliest recorded use of feng shui was in 960 BC. Although centuries ago, the ancients began developing feng shui by observing nature as a way to understand the harmony of all life. This, by the way, a friend of mine took this picture in Hawaii. It's Rainbow Falls, Hawaii. And I just thought it was such a beautiful, you know, wind and water. You can kind of get a feel of the flow and the breezes. In nature, they sensed an energy that flowed through and animated all things. And they called that energy qi, which means the breath of life. By studying the qi of their surroundings, the ancients were able to determine which areas would be the safest to live in, which would provide the most abundant food supply, and which conditions would allow them to live most harmoniously, both in and with their surroundings year-round. And today, we practice feng shui indoors to create that same harmonious balance that we find in nature. And we go with the flow, just like we're doing tonight. We go with the flow of the natural cycles and the seasons, and we incorporate the natural elements into our homes. Because we know that when our surroundings are harmonious and in harmony with nature, they work for us rather than against us. The main tool that we use in feng shui is called the Bagua map. This is what we use to balance and harmonize the energy of our homes. And in Chinese, ba means eight, and gua means trigram or side. So a Bagua map is an eight-sided diagram that's superimposed over the scale drawing of a home or a room or a plot of land in order to find its life areas, which we call guas. And each life area, as you can see on the Bagua map, has a particular color or colors associated with, and then the gua in the center and then in the cardinal directions that form a cross, they also have corresponding shapes and elements. And all of these things represent and also hold the vibrations of the five natural elements from which all things are created. So the elements are wood, fire, metal, earth, and water. And in case you've ever wondered where the Bagua map originated, for a long time I studied feng shui and didn't know exactly why the Bagua map looked like it did, you know, the eight-sided diagram, and why it took that shape. Here's a bit of history that I found in a book by Susan Levitt called The Taoist Feng Shui, The Ancient Roots of the Chinese Art of Placements. The creation of the eight trigrams is attributed to the legendary Chinese king Fu Shi, who ruled during the third millennium BC. Fu Shi developed the eight trigrams after observing the patterns on the shell of a tortoise as it emerged from the Yellow River. In the tortoise shell's orderly markings, Fu Shi saw in microcosmic form the primal energies of the entire universe. From then on, the tortoise shell's markings became the eight trigrams that we've come to symbolize the natural world as heaven and earth, fire and water, mountain and wind, and thunder and lake. Fu Shi laid out these eight symbols in an eight-sided map that became known as the early heaven sequence. And then about seven centuries later, King Wen of the Shao dynasty developed the later heaven sequence, which is the Bagua map that we use today, the one that you saw, which I'll be showing you again. By the way, this is the cover of the book whose title I just mangled. I added the labels to this slide to help identify the trigrams more easily, but that's where they're from. So if you were to take the Bagua map that we use today and superimpose it over a scale drawing of your home, your front door or mouth of qi would be located in one of the front three guas, which are knowledge and self-cultivation, career and life path, and helpful people in travel. To understand, you know, why these guas are so important and what they do, they hold the energy that helps you get things started in life. To understand why they're so important, imagine yourself standing outside of your career gua, and you're about to open your front door. So you're right in the center, and you're about to step into your front door. And imagine that your house represents your life in all of its facets. Now you open that front door and step inside. And you're now poised to move through not only your home, but your life. You'll take most of your journey via a vessel called career. Will you have mostly smooth sailing on your life journey? Or will you encounter many stormy seas? What gifts and tools will life provide you to navigate successfully? To discover your gifts and tools, you look to your left, and then to your right. And on your left, you find knowledge, wisdom, and spiritual strength. And on your right are helpful people who make your travels easier. You rearrange your vessel and take knowledge and helpful people aboard, being mindful of maintaining that perfect balance. Now you're ready to move ahead to the middle of your home. The middle three guas in your home, family and ancestors, health in all areas, and creativity in children, these three middle guas hold the energy that helps things develop and grow. So if the chi doesn't stall in or rush through the front three guas, you'll have plenty of energy to get your good ideas and projects off the ground. And then if the chi can move easily and smoothly into the middle three guas and through them, your ideas and your projects will go easily and smoothly too. Whereas the front of your home provides your connection to the outside world, literally and figuratively, the middle provides your support system. As the names of the middle gua suggest, that support comes in the form of your family and their contributions, a healthy body and mind, and your creative ideas and abilities. So having a harmonious balance of energy both in and among these middle three guas will keep your life flowing and growing. Moving on. The back three guas of your home, wealth and prosperity, fame and reputation, and marriage and relationships, these guas hold the energy that helps bring things to completion and fruition. And this is where we yield results. As I mentioned earlier, if the chi doesn't stall in those front three guas and it can get through them smoothly and easily, and then it gets through your middle three guas too, you have a chance to get things off the ground. They develop and grow, and then if they can move to and through the back three guas easily, you can see your ideas and projects come to completion and fruition, and then you get the payoff. I call it the big payola. And you know, you can reap those rewards, as the name suggests, of those three guas. They can come in the forms of monetary compensation, a good reputation, and solid and strong relationships and partnerships. At the center of the Bagua map is the Tai Chi symbol, which is also known most commonly as the yin-yang symbol. And although the Tai Chi or yin-yang symbol is a static, one-dimensional symbol, it actually represents the dynamic three-dimensional concept of the perfect balance of complementary opposites. I provided some examples on this slide. The left-hand column is a list of the yin or female aspects, which correspond to the black half of the symbol. And the right-hand column lists the yang or male component of each pairing, or complement of each pairing. And the yang aspects correspond to the white half of the symbol. One more dynamic concept that the yin-yang symbol represents is perpetual transformation. Again, it's a static symbol, but it represents movement and perpetual transformation. And if you look at those two dots in the symbol, they represent the idea that there's a seed or a beginning of yang, always present in the yin, and likewise there's a seed of the yin, always present within the yang. One example of this is days and nights perpetually transforming one into the other. And speaking of days and nights, does anybody know what times of day and night are the most transformative of all? Anybody? Okay. Well, you're close. What did you say? 3 a.m.? Close. The most transformative time of day is between 11 a.m., and this is day we're talking, 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., and I'll tell you why. Let's start, look at the 11, if you're thinking of 11 a.m., look at that 11 where the red hand is pointing. You can see what looks like the tiny black tip of a fish's tail there. And that tail represents the tail end of the wee morning hours, which we call the middle of the night. Now look at the numeral 12 on the clock face. At that time, morning is transforming into high noon, which is the brightest part of the day. So you see the white slice there at the 12. And as the day moves toward 1 p.m., which is 1 hour after noon, which is why we call it, wait for it, one in the afternoon. Anyway, when the clock strikes 1 p.m., the daytime hours continue to get shorter then as we approach the darkness of night. So to sum it up, because the wee morning hours are transforming into the next day between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., those 3 hours are the best time of any day to implement changes in our lives, especially if you're a morning person, which I am not. So if you're a night owl, however, like I am, and you love the silent stillness of the evening and you like to get things done in the middle of the night, then you can take advantage, as I do, of the energy of the most transformative time of night. Same times, from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So starting again, back to the 11 p.m., if you look at that red hand that's pointing to the 11 again, you can see what looks like the tiny white tip of a fish's tail this time. That tail represents the tail end of the previous long stretch of daylight. Now moving on to the 12, at that time the daylight has ended and it's transforming into those wee morning hours of night again, which we call the middle of the night. Now moving on to 1 a.m., which is 1 hour after the middle of the night, which is why we call it, yes, of course, 1 hour after midnight, the nighttime hours get shorter and as we move back toward the light of a new day. So, because nighttime is transforming into morning between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., the energy during those 3 hours is also a great time to implement changes. You know, while I was discussing how the practice of feng shui began, I mentioned that the ancient Chinese developed feng shui by observing the landscape of their natural surroundings to help them understand the harmony of all life. And though we still, of course, study nature and we work to replicate its harmonious energy indoors, as we move more and more and more indoors, many of us in the modern world, well, we've moved more and more into the internal landscapes of our minds as well. So in my personal feng shui practice, I stress a component that involves not only adjusting the energy of our home or our external surroundings, but also involves adjusting the energy of our thoughts and our internal landscapes as well. So in my feng shui practice, I include also the study of human nature. And in the book that I created for my clients and students, I introduced this idea by taking apart and deconstructing the yin-yang symbol and then putting it back together again. And I did this to illustrate the notion that, well, to put it a few ways, as ye think, so shall ye be, or thoughts become things, eventually, or where your attention goes, your energy flows. And my favorite, what I told you about last month when I was here, I received this one from my Akashic Masters, teachers, and loved ones. When you focus on what matters to you most, it becomes the physical matter that surrounds you. And ideally, it's the matter that supports you as you consciously and deliberately create the life you desire. So, let me show you what I mean here, and then after that, I'm gonna give you my most recent example of how I used feng shui to adjust the energy of my external environment so that it both matches and supports the energy and the inner landscape of my thoughts, and vice versa. So, okay, looking at the Tai Chi symbol, or the yin-yang symbol again, in essence, this symbol is a nutshell representation of the Taoist belief that everything in the universe is created by and returns to the same source, the Tao, which, if you're not Taoist, you might call God or the Creator. According to Taoist theory, the first stage in the creation of everything in the universe is called Wu Qi, and Wu Qi means primal energy, the source of all things. And the Chinese depicted this primal energy in the form of a circle. And this makes perfect sense because when you look at the circle, it's empty and full at the same time. So the Wu Qi circle is like a womb or an egg, and it's alive itself, yet it's waiting to hold life. In the next stage, the egg is fertilized, and a dot or a seed appears in the circle, and it causes a change in its energy. Whereas the energy of the egg is calm and still, the energy of the seed is lively and active. So the once solitary circle is now two entities, each with its own energetic force. As the seed begins to grow, the two energetic forces keep shifting and changing. Soon each force fills one half of the circle. The dark half represents the yin or female, and the light half represents the yang or the male energy. Next, the two energies begin to swirl around each other and embrace. The two forces are so perfectly balanced that they mirror each other like a photograph and it's negative. In this Tai Chi symbol, the outer circle still represents what it did in the beginning. It still represents Wu Qi, nothing and everything at once, undifferentiated potential. However, inside the circle now exist yin and yang, two equal yet opposite forces in perfectly balanced motion. Okay, now let's take this a little bit further. Now let's imagine that your mind is like the circle, Wu Qi. It's pure potentiality and it's waiting to give birth to your thoughts. It wants to help your thoughts create your reality and turn them into matter. So let's say a particular thought or an idea pops into your mind. That egg called your mind is fertilized with the seed of your initial thought. Then that single thought starts expanding into even more thoughts as you start to observe it from different sides or perspectives. Your thoughts begin to swirl and expand, and they expand so much that they fill your mind and you give them your focused attention. And you remember the saying, where your attention goes, your energy flows. So in other words, as you focus your thoughts on a specific thing or situation, the energy of your thoughts draws it to you, and it becomes part of your third dimensional reality. It becomes matter. So it truly is about mind over matter. It's about using the energy of your thoughts to create what matters to you most. And this is a dynamic and ever-changing process as one thought or one situation turns into another and another and another, just like the cycles and the seasons of nature, just as day turns into night. And speaking of day turning into night, I'd like to share now my personal feng shui story that illustrates this idea even further. At the end of a really difficult year, sorry, honey, I'm going to talk about my husband. If you don't know Adrian by now, you will by the end of this talk. At the end of a really difficult year in our lives, Adrian and I, well, we created a feng shui ceremony to help us make some really powerful changes. It was time, we were ready, so I put my feng shui hat on and we created a ceremony for ourselves. And we decided to not only perform our ceremony during the most transformative time of night, that time between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., we also decided to perform it during those 3 hours when New Year's Eve turns into New Year's Day. So we were riding on all kinds of transformative energy. I actually do a whole talk that explains this, you know, process, you know, step by step. But for the purpose of tonight's discussion, I'm just going to give you like a quick overview of the relevant steps, because what I really want to get to is what happened after we did the ceremony this past year when we rung out 2015 and ushered in 2016. So those parts. Part one involves ringing out the old by cleaning your house and clearing your clutter. You knew I wasn't going to do a feng shui talk without talking about clutter. So Adrian and I, since we begin our ceremony at 11 on New Year's Eve, we usually spend the week between Christmas and New Year's Eve cleaning and decluttering as much as we possibly can. And, you know, of course, depending on your home and your time constraints, it may take more or less than that time for you. But the whole goal here, the idea, is to make room for new things to show up in the coming year. So we do our best. And then while we work on our home, we mentally go through a clutter checklist, which I developed after a discussion with some of my feng shui students once about why people don't or won't or can't even think about getting rid of their clutter. So in the end, we determined that something is not clutter only if we could insert the word and after every single one of these criteria. It's not clutter if it's in good working order and it serves a useful purpose and you use it on a regular or even seasonal basis and it reflects who you are and what's important to you now. And it lifts your spirits when you look at it. So how do we determine if something is clutter? Well, something is clutter if it doesn't work or doesn't fit So it doesn't serve a useful purpose. So you seldom or never use it. So it no longer reflects who you are or what's important to you now. So it brings you down when you look at it. You know, a statement that I hear all the time, and I've been known to utter it myself, is, "But I paid good money for that." And my response is always the same. Well, now it's pretty expensive clutter, isn't it? And really, I have to say that to myself when I'm looking at something that I haven't used in years, and it's just like, you know, okay, it's got to go because it doesn't fit all these criteria on the checklist. So why not give it to somebody now who can just completely restore its value? Okay, so part two is actually the official start of the ceremony. From about 11 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve, we continue to ring out the old by clearing the energy of our entire space. With, you know, whatever space clearing methods that we have available and whatever we choose, we do it differently from year to year now. This year, for example, I walked around with some purifying incense while Adrian rang a brass bell that I got from Bali. But there's so many other options. For example, you can burn white candles or incense or sage. The idea behind all of these methods when you burn something is that fire burns off unwanted energy. And as the smoke rises and dissipates, it takes all that unwanted energy with it and leaves clear and purified energy in its place. Another thing you can do for people who are allergic to smoke, or I personally am not crazy about the smell of sage, so one thing you can do is diffuse an essential oil. This is a great alternative. One way to diffuse is to put water and several drops of your favorite purifying essential oil into a cold air diffuser. And it's important to use a cold air diffuser because heat can actually alter the chemical properties of the oils and lessen their effectiveness. So we always use a cold air diffuser. But if you don't have one or you don't want to use one, if you've got a glass spray bottle at home, you can put some water into it and several drops of the oil and just spritz, and it works beautifully. You know, because Adrian and I are working on three different levels, we have the main floor, attic, and a basement. Sometimes when I don't feel like burning things and coughing and all that, I'll just spritz. I'll take the spray bottle and spritz, and I have a list here of some of the purifying oils. Last time, I think we used fennel, I think, last year, Adrian. So another great option is sound. You can ring a bell, or you can use finger cymbals, tingshas, or harmony balls. And any of these work well because, you know, again, sounds break up and disperse the unwanted energy, and they're quick and sharp, and they do it really fast. If you don't have any of these things, you can clap. I took a workshop with Karen Kingston, who is like the clutter queen, and she taught us to clap three times. When you get to a corner, you know, start at the floor and clap really like hard and sharp. I won't do it because I don't want to hurt you with my mic. Once at the floor, once in the middle, and once toward the ceiling. And you can do that in all your corners. And that just breaks up and disperses that energy as well. Of course, another space clearing option is always to open your windows and just let the, you know, fresh air blow through. But because those of us who live in Chicago, on New Year's Eve, it's not always the most ideal conditions because the temperatures are very frigid. So that's not always my favorite method, but it works. It works. So during the third part of the ceremony, which goes from around 11:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve to about 12:15 a.m. on New Year's Day, Adrian and I do a burning ceremony. Last year, I had typed something on a sheet of paper, and we took it down. We have a wood stove in our basement, and we took the sheet of paper down in advance, and we wrote. I wrote this on the top, and it says, "As we complete the year 2015, we release these things from our lives and our home." And then Adrian and I sat, because we had several minutes, we sat and listed out all the feelings, words, thoughts, emotions, actions, attitudes, behaviors, habits, anything we could think of that kept us and our household from achieving the most harmonious state of balance and peace in 2015. We just wrote furiously, just wrote it all out. And then just before midnight, we put our list into the wood stove, and we just sat and watched as the whole thing burned. We had to set it on fire a couple times to make sure the whole thing burned. But, you know, the idea is to just wring it all out, just get rid of it all. And then we were ready to ring in the new by setting our intentions for 2016. So from about 12:15 to 1 a.m. on New Year's Day, it was now New Year's Day, we sat together and made a brand new list. And at the top of a new sheet of paper, I had typed this phrase: "As we begin the year 2016, we intend and invite these things into our lives and our homes." And then we listed all the new thoughts and actions and attitudes and behaviors and all those ideas and things that we wanted to do, with which we intended to replace the old. I don't know if you do this, but it's a really good idea. Whenever you're space clearing or doing anything where you're getting rid of one thing, always intend or state what you want to replace it with. Because if you don't, you get more of the same. So we always are very careful to bring in, you know, ring in and bring in whatever we want to change, bring in for the new. And then we made three more lists. We just started to do this. It contains our intentions for what we want to stop, start, and continue in 2016. And then we take these lists and we post, I print them out, and we post them around the house so that, you know, as we're talking, if we want to remind ourselves of our goals or congratulate ourselves for achieving one of them, you know, we read our list and we remind ourselves what we're doing. And whenever we've done something good, we high-five each other or whatever. And we keep ourselves on track, essentially, and we remember our intentions. Okay, so that was the mind part of our ceremony during which we planted those seeds of intention. But next came even more actions. In the days after our New Year's Eve ceremony, Adrian and I began implementing some feng shui adjustments and enhancements to make that energy of our outer environment support our new thoughts and intentions. And since one of our main intentions this particular year was to increase our household income, one of the things we did, We started by hanging amethyst crystals in the corners of some of our main doorways in our home, like at the top in the corner. We did this because purple is the feng shui color whose energetic vibration attracts and supports prosperity. And we specifically placed the amethysts where we did in those upper right-hand corners because we had learned from energy architect, he's a friend of ours too, Carrie Weldy, that when your body passes through a doorway, it actually absorbs whatever energy the doorway is projecting. So we hung our amethyst crystals so that our bodies could absorb and entrain themselves to the vibration, the energetic vibration of prosperity and abundance. Another thing we did, we thoroughly cleaned our stove and replaced the drip pans. And we did that because in feng shui, your stove is considered your home's most important money generator. And it's also its most important appliance because the thinking is that when you can cook healthful meals and then consume them, then you stay healthy and you work at peak performance, and your peak performance, your maximum performance, allows you to make the most money. So health, wealth, and happiness are really all related, and they're all tied to the stove. Also, since each stove, the burners on a stove, each one represents a different source of income in feng shui, we replaced our drip pans to make it easier to fire on all cylinders as efficiently as possible, while not only igniting our creative sparks, but lighting a fire under our existing and potential sources of income, so that we could cook up some successful recipes for increasing our prosperity. How's that for an extended metaphor? So we cleaned our entire stove. We cleaned our entire stove and we replaced the drip pans. Another thing we did, and this isn't a physical feng shui cure, but it definitely speaks to both seeding and feeding those intentions. From January through April, I wrote my personal intentions on each month's new moon and full moon. Because, well, you know what they say, what the new moon promises, the full moon delivers. So I always set intentions on both the new moon and the full moon. And then the last thing, for those of you who know what a feng shui money pot is, does anybody use a feng shui money? Oh, thank you, okay. Over the vernal equinox, which was, last time I was here actually, it was that weekend in March, I gave away and replaced my 9 money pot bills. And I further strengthened my intentions to increase my prosperity. So as I was putting my new 9 bills into the money pot, as I was putting the first 8 in, I was telling myself and confirming for myself, okay, you know, these are the ways, the current streams of income, these are the ways I already, bring in income. And these are the ways I'm working to increase. But then when I got to that 9th bill and I put it into the pot, I said, you know, I'm open for new possibilities. And then I just, you know, left it up to the universe. And I said, this or something better now manifests for the highest good of all concerned. Well, soon after Adrian and I made all these feng shui adjustments, some pretty awesome things started to happen. For one thing, a sweet friend of my cousin who lives in Colorado, someone I had never met before, never met before, she sent me this bracelet. She just made it and she sent it to me. And she didn't know that purple is the feng shui color for prosperity. She just, you know, the energetic vibration of purple supports prosperity. But, you know, I just said, trust your gut, tell me, you know. I gave her a couple of color ideas, and purple was last on the list. And I said, just trust your gut, make me something. So she nailed it. She used her intuition and she nailed it. Not only does it have the purple beads for prosperity, it has silver and white beads, which are both representative of creativity, which, you know, I'm a writer. I do things that I have to use my creativity all the time. And then it also has a few tiny black beads, which hold the vibration and support career. She nailed it. And she just sent it to me out of the blue for nothing. Oh, and by the way, this is my favorite part. Her name is Julie Moore. So like James Bond, like Moore, Julie Moore. So right after my prosperity bracelet arrived from Julie Moore, completely out of the blue, or out of the purple, as it were, two of my Akashic clients gifted me a total of $525. Just $525. Just as a gift, as a way of thanking me for my services and for my work. I was floored. I was absolutely floored. And I was very grateful. But you know, I never once said, I don't believe it. Because I did. Based on my intentions and my actions, I did believe it. Well, inspired by those events, I decided I would take even more action. At the beginning of the year, I had made the decision that one of the ways I would increase my prosperity was to create more passive income. I didn't have a clue how I was going to do that, mind you, but I just focused the energy of my thoughts on what mattered to me most, and I just asked the universe, just show me what I can do what actions to take to increase my passive income. So after I set my new moon intentions in February, I kept hearing this little voice in my head. It's time to get your house in order. It's time to get your house in order. Before things can really start happening, you need to rid yourself of everything that's standing in your way and preventing things from making their way to you. So, okay, I'm going to admit this to you right now. You know, Adrian and I, we have other obligations, family obligations, that take us away for 1 to 2 weekends a month, and this has been going on for 2 years. And so some of the big jobs that we should be doing around our house and that we should have done between Christmas and New Year's, they keep getting put on the back burner, no pun intended. So our cleaning and our clutter clearing left a little bit to be desired this year, figuratively and literally. So I was ready. I was hearing that message and I was ready to do that. So when I heard get your house in order, I thought, okay, I'll do that. So I decided to take 1 month off, something I have never done as long as we've lived at Chez Loyer, and I was going to clean and declutter my house from top to bottom, from attic to basement. And so I was really excited. I mean, we'd never done that. Adrian was going away on a ski trip, so I was like, great, got the house to myself. I'm going to work in the middle of the night because I'm usually up till 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and keeping all these crazy hours, and I can vacuum and nobody's going to be there and I could just do it all. So I took a calendar and I blocked out 1 full month. And then I made a schedule of what I would do every single day. Going with the flow of how the chi and we enter and move through our home, I would start in those front 3 guas right by my front door. And on days 1 and 2, I would work in the front bedroom. On day 3, I'd move over into the living room and so on. And I would just, you know, slowly work my way through the entire house, allotting the necessary time and, you know, for every room, every level, whatever it needed, leaving a lot of days for the attic at the end. So after about 4 days into what I had dubbed my house cleaning, clutter clearing extravaganza, my friend Cindy wrote and she said, you know, you really need to teach online feng shui courses, because she had just taken an online course with a website that, you know, an online website, like a university. And she said, it was not very good at all, and you could do a way better job. And she was really disappointed with it. So she said, you know, just create your own online feng shui courses. Well, I took her message seriously because, number one, Cindy had been my chat room moderator for the radio show that I did once a week for 9 months, 2 hours a week, talking about feng shui. So she knew what I had to say about feng shui. So I really trusted her. And I trusted when she said, you know, you could do it and you could do it well. So the second one is I'd been asking, right? I'd been asking for a way to create passive income, and I didn't know what to do, but hey, I'm open, and so here comes Cindy. And, you know, that was great. It might be the perfect thing. The only problem was that, number one, I had no idea how to do it. And so I was scared. I was willing, but I was scared. But with Cindy's help, I found somebody to help me get a pretty good start. Well, once I got going, I really started going. First, I bought a new laptop, which you see right here. Then I got a new microphone and the software that I was going to need to, do my classes. And I got some training at the Apple Store. Also, I almost bought, but I didn't, a pair of headphones on two separate occasions at the Apple Store. But each time I would look at them, I was at the Naperville store once and the Oak Brook store the second time. And every time I looked at these headphones, I was like, I'll wait. So I didn't get the headphones. But mind you, this was all happening when I was supposed to be cleaning my house. So suddenly, instead of adhering to my cleaning schedule, I found myself stopping in the middle of cleaning and decluttering and running into my office and typing ideas for my online courses. And before I knew it, I'd be sitting at my computer for hours. And I was working on the classes, but my house wasn't getting any cleaner. So what the heck? How was that going with the flow? When I was working on my house, I wanted to be working on the classes. When I was working on the classes, I should have been working on my house. So after getting through three rooms very thoroughly, which is why you kind of see my calendar stop, I got through those three rooms. I packed up 8 large boxes for the Cancer Federation. My frustration just got the better of me. I looked up and I was like, all right, I get it. I don't know who I was shouting at, but since nobody was home, I was like, nobody in particular. I get it. I'm willing. I don't know why, but I'm just gonna trust this. I'm gonna go with the flow. And I walked into my office. I grabbed my house cleaning clutter clearing extravaganza calendar and I ripped it into little pieces and I threw it in the garbage. Well, after that, I still kept cleaning, but it wasn't at breakneck speed anymore. And although our house was getting cleaned and our clutter was making its way out the front door, as the literal and figurative dust began to settle, I soon realized the true gift inherent in my cleaning extravaganza. As I'm sure you can tell by now, as I cleared more and more from our physical space, my actions were allowing me to clear more and more from my head space. And when I could see my life more clearly, on all levels, I could finally start ridding myself of all those thoughts and beliefs and ideas and habits and actions that had been both hemming me in and holding me back and preventing me from being more joyfully productive. Oh, quick sidebar here. While I was cleaning my office during the extravaganza, I came across this quote that I had put in my office back in 2011. And it says, "The feeling of being hurried is not usually the result of living a full life and having no time. It is, on the contrary, born of a vague fear that we are wasting our life. When we do not do the one thing we ought to do, we have no time for anything else, and we're the busiest people in the world." Yep, totally saw myself in that statement. So relating that to my feng shui story, there is a relationship there. Since I'd ripped up my old schedule, I had made myself a new one. From that point on, I built in the time into my schedule to do, quoting Hoffer, the one thing I ought to do. I mean, I had asked for prosperity and more ways to do it. So I had to get over my own fears. So now, barring any unforeseen circumstances, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I give Akashic record readings and I do my feng shui work. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I've begun working on my online courses. And I get whatever help I need from wherever I get it. I'm not afraid anymore. And now I'm actually getting really excited and I'm getting pretty good at it. So on the weekends, when Adrian and I aren't scheduled to be my mom's caregivers, we spend time just hanging out, doing whatever we want. So there's time. There's time. It's like time opened up and expanded when I did this. It's not, I'm doing more, but it feels like I'm doing less. So now, okay, I'm getting to the end of my feng shui story, and this is where it gets exciting but really long, so I'm just going to cut straight to the chase. While I was here last month, I shared some bits of wisdom that I received from my Akashic records. I don't know if you remember the Akashisms I was sharing. One of them said, When you say no to one thing, you say yes to something else. And another one said, when things either fall in line or they fall apart. Well, to make a really long story as short as possible, here's what happened one Saturday in February when I said no and then yes to exactly the right things. On that Saturday, I was again quoting Hoffer, being the busiest person in the world. During the previous week, working up to that Saturday, I had said yes to three different things, just so I'd have two good excuses not to do the one thing I should be doing. I just wanted to avoid that one thing, so I overbooked myself on purpose. Good, eh? So first, I had committed to spending the day with Adrian because he was going to be taking off on a ski trip, and we wanted to spend that day together. But I also had signed up to do this brainathon thing online with John Assaraf that day. And I also had committed to going to the Arboretum with my friend Kim. Of course, I wanted to do all three things, but of course I couldn't. So I asked Kim if we could walk another day. And she was like, yeah, sure. I'll walk with or without you. Don't worry about it. Just go do your thing. So, okay, that was one thing. So then I asked Adrian if we could hang out later in the afternoon so that I could at least start the brainathon because, you know, I had signed up for it and I wanted to catch it. And so I just thought, okay, give me an hour or two. I'll just get started on this. And he was like, yeah, you know, we'll do it later. Don't worry about it. So we had a kind of a leisurely morning. The brainathon thing, by the way, this is so cool. It was an introduction to a 12-week course that had great appeal to me because it was aligned with my intentions of increasing my prosperity. And it involves the use of neuroscience and brain retraining, which I've been interested in for quite some time. I actually came here to the TS and took a class in HemiSync for the weekend. It's all stuff I'm into. So this course had really great appeal to me. Okay, so there's an abundance of synchronicities that I could share here, but here's the upshot. I really wanted to sign up for this course, but I didn't want to spend the money because I had taken the month off work. So I was, you know, eager to get back to work, but I really wanted to take this course. So, okay, while I was in the bath, I decided to take a bath. So I'm listening to the brainathon. I have my computer up. We have this ledge thing. I had my computer up. I'm taking a bath. I'm taking pictures of the screen with my cell phone because John was giving these 10 tips to prosperity, and I didn't want to miss anything, right? So I'm in the tub, and every once in a while I'd snap a picture and then, you know, listen some more. And Adrian's like, are we getting ready to go in there? I'm like, oh, yeah. So in any case, of course, I couldn't take notes in the bathtub, so this is what I did. This is how I did it. So as soon as John wrote tip number 10 of these 10 tips, I snapped a picture, and then I jumped out of the tub, put my laptop down, you know, muted the sound on the brainathon, put my phone down, got dressed, got all ready, and we went for our walk. And then while we were walking in the woods near our home, I was telling Adrian, this course, I got to take and he was like, you know what, take the course. Just take the course. And I was like, okay, really, I'll do that. When we get back, I'm going to sign up. So after we got back from our walk, I opened my laptop again, unmuted it, and I was back in the brainathon. I was still signed into the chat room and everything. Just as I turned the sound back on, John said, and now we're going to give away one of our prizes. Can anybody guess what the prize was? What was it?
The workshop.
Not the workshop, no. Would have been nice. The headphones. Oh, man. What were the chances? I just happened to look down at my phone right as he was saying that, and I was like, oh my gosh, because he was going to ask a question. And I was like, what's he going to ask? And I looked at that last tip, number 10 tip, and I thought, I know what he's going to ask. He's going to ask, what does G-O-Y-A stand for? So I typed the answer to what does G-O-Y-A stand for into the dialog box because I was still logged into the chat room. And as soon as I thought, he said, be the first person to answer this question in our chat room and you will win the headphones. What does G-O-Y-A stand for? And before he even finished the question, I hit send. Guess what? I was jumping up and down like crazy. The same headphones that I had, they're called Beats headphones, that I had been looking at, and that I needed to geomaye so that I could create those online feng shui courses, and that I would also be needing to listen to the daily brain retraining meditations in John's course. I want them. Me. I won. But again, I wouldn't allow myself to say I don't believe it because I really did. I mean, in January, I had set my intentions to increase my prosperity. And since then, we had done as much as we possibly could to align ourselves with those intentions by saying no, or no, not now, to the right things, and yes to the right things. And that had caused the universe to say a whole bunch of yeses after that. But wait, the story gets better. I was still jumping up and down in the kitchen going, Adrian, I won the headphones, oh my gosh. And then I got this email from a staff member on John's staff, and he said, hey, Julia, congratulations on winning the headphones. If you take a picture of yourself wearing the headphones, Christine said it, send us the picture and you win the course for free. Oh, come on. So a pair of $250 headphones, a $1,500 course for free. Oh, my stars, I thought my head was going to explode. Of course, I sent the picture. And true to John's promise, I got the class for free. And now I'm about halfway through the course right now, and so many things have happened since then, but I'm going to stop here because I know you get the idea of the transformative power of feng shui. And you can see that I shared this story because, you know, it's one thing to hear somebody talk about, you know, the transformative power of feng shui, la, 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 in theoretical and philosophical terms, and yet to actually see how someone can take that theory and put it into practice and then yield results. Well, that's how I learn best, so that's how I thought I would share this, and this is how I also like to teach. I'm going to end this evening by saying what I said every week at the end of my radio show. Good night and good chi. Keep it flowing, my friends. Thank you.
Julia, in your presentation, you had a room, just one slide of an actual room.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a room that you worked on?
No, it's just a picture I found. You know what? And I'll go back to it. What's your question about it?
I just wondered if you had worked on it in order to...
No, but I'll tell you why I chose it. Thanks for asking about that. I didn't work on that room. But if you'll recall, before I showed that room, I showed this picture. And I was talking about the fact that the ancient Chinese used feng shui to locate like the places that would yield the most abundant food supply and where they would be safest and could live in harmony with their environment year-round. And then if you'll notice, you know, there's this green and yellow, and there's these flowing hills, and it's just really beautiful and lush, and there's a lot of movement in the terrain. This picture, to me, the next thing I said was, you know, we took feng shui from outdoors, and now we go with the flow, and we apply the elements, and we go with all that indoors. It's got the same kind of squares in the carpet. It's kind of hard to see, but it's got the same squares like the plots of land did, those yellow and green squares. It's got the flowing green sofa that looked like those beautiful hills, and it looks like a lush, like a, you know, velvet or faux suede or maybe even suede sofa. And in this picture are represented all five elements. The circles represent metal and the glass, and there's actually a little picture of water. There's water in this picture. It looks like some sort of pier or something. So we have circles. These all represent metal. And, you know, there is actually metal, the element metal there. The circular tables represent metal. And the light itself represent fire. So we've got water, metal, and fire. The undulating shapes are water. And in that picture that was before, there were these little purple spots in the terrain, too. So I thought this just sort of replicated that outdoor scene indoors. But no, I didn't work on it. Did you have a question? Do you hate it? No,
well,
I'm kidding.
I just wondered if you had created that.
No. Oh, and earth, by the way, the yellow represents square shape and yellow represents earth. So that was all the five elements. And that's pretty much why I chose it. But no, I did not work on it. Yes?
When you're working on your mapping, how do you account for like garages and double layered houses, like tri-levels, things like that?
It all depends. If there is living space above the garage, then I lay it over the main floor. I will lay it over the garage as well, if there's living space above. If there's no living space and it's kind of like a detached, I mean, it's attached, but it's all by itself, I often will not. But you know what? I hate to make rules like that because I do it on a case-by-case basis, and that's why I encourage students to bring their own floor plans. And when I teach my big, long class, it's a 12-week class, or 12-hour class, I'm sorry, everybody gets a feng shui consultation, and that's exactly why. Sometimes homes just sort of like defy the principles and I have to just toss the book out the window. But as a general rule, if there's living space above the garage, I will include it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So you talked about when you were decluttering, and you talked about your attic. Mm-hmm. So other than decluttering your attic, did you do anything else in that space?
We're still working on it. because in the school of feng shui that I practice, we put the Bagua map over the main floor, but if there are levels, it's sort of like you're slicing a layer cake. So wherever career is, upstairs there's career and downstairs there's career. So I actually arrange my attic according to the guas. So if, for example, in the family area, the element is wood, and so if I have books or boxes or anything made of paper or actually wood objects or wood products, I'll put those in that part of the attic because the vibration of that element supports and harmonizes things. And so I'll, you know, harmonizes and supports family especially. So I will arrange my attic as much as possible according to the guas and the elements and the colors and shapes. But, you know, just the, I was talking about things that being clutter. Because some of what we have in the attic is seasonal, just the very act of taking everything out, looking at it, holding it, saying, like Marie Kondo, if anybody's read that book, the Magic Art of Tidying Up, she'll say, hold it in your hands and say, you know, does this bring joy? Does it spark joy? Sometimes I'll just look at something with new eyes and say, you know, as much as I used to love this thing, it's not doing it for me anymore. So just the act of taking things out, holding them, unpacking them, whatever, and then putting them back, that's creating, you know, motion and movement right there. And so the chi is circulating. And then whatever I get rid of, you know, will lighten my load, so to speak. Because the attic represents, you know, your headspace. It represents thoughts and ideas. And if there's a lot of hanging over your head, literally and figuratively, like in your house, in your attic, but you've got a lot of stuff up there, sometimes clearing out the cobwebs is a nice idea. So, yeah, but we're not finished with the attic.
So this basically includes both inner space and outer space, because cleaning out just outside is just half solution, but inside out, you know, if you have a lot of clutter of thoughts and moods got mixed up in a low emotional area, doesn't matter what you fix on outside, it's still, you know.
I would agree with that, yeah. I mean, if I have a home office, and even if you have an office in a building, have you ever sat down to start to do something, do a project, and if it's a new project, if there's a bunch of mess everywhere, it's like, I can't do this. I have to literally get up, and I have to straighten it, clear my desk off, clear my office, you know, throw away files from the old projects and get out the new stuff. And it, like, my mind gets affected by the clutter. So you're absolutely right. I would agree. It's got to be like an inside job and an outside. Your thoughts reflect your environment and vice versa. If you want to think about what matters to you most, if you really want to think about it, look at your house and look at the parts that are pristine and the parts that are a mess. You know, like sometimes I'll do a consultation for somebody and, you know, they'll be walking me through the house. And one of the things I do when I do the consult is I watch for their energy. So as we're walking through the house, if they're like, you know, close the door real fast, or, you know, and here's the room we love, and everybody comes in here and they relax and they love it, and then they go to a closet or a bedroom, you know, I know that something's going on over there. So we'll look at that life area. What gua or life area does that room or that area fall in? And chances are there's something in their life, say it's the family and ancestors gua, that they don't want to look at their family situation. And so you're absolutely right. I would totally agree that it's an inside job and an outside job, and it's like chicken and egg, you know? Yeah. One is a reflection of the other. Yes.
Well, you talked about things hanging over your head being in the attic. Well, the same thing goes for under the bed or in the basement?
Yes, yes. The basement represents your foundation, foundational issues, foundational beliefs, whatever. So if your basement is all cluttered, it might mean that, you know, there's something that you don't want to look at in terms of the way you were raised, and it's all of a sudden you're having a challenging belief and you're having some cognitive dissonance about, you know, something that you always held as true, you know. So the basement can reflect that. Under your bed, thank you for saying that. I once had a client who actually stored swords under her bed, which isn't good for all kinds of reasons. But one, you know, what you want to have under your bed are yin things, soft, if you have to have anything at all. Blankets, pillows, you know, soft, fluffy sweaters. Best to have nothing. But if there's something under there, make it very yin, something that supports a good night's sleep, like a feather. You know, you feel like you're being cradled in like a feather bed. Swords are metal and very young, and they're very combative, and they represent combat. So to have that going on underneath you all night, not such a great idea. So you're absolutely right. Stuff underneath as well needs to be examined. Yeah.
Okay. Is it possible to have a room or a space or in your house or the whole house that's too spartan or too empty or too naked?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what, it's the reverse of clutter, and I don't know what to call that, but it creates chi stagnation when you don't have enough in your environment. Think about like trees without the leaves. You know, they don't yield fruit. They don't blossom, they don't bloom, they don't continue life. And so if something is way too sparse, then there's chi stagnation in that way, chi deficiency. That is also, you know, we're going for balance.